You call that radio?
If you call that radio's audio podcast, it's season 4, it's episode 16, and today we've got an interview with the very funny Christopher MacArthur Boyd, a stand-up comedian. You might have seen him on the telly, or you might have heard him as Frankie Boyle's co-host in Here Comes the Guillotine. Brilliant podcast, the two of them, plus Susie McCabe, is top tier podcasting. So definitely check that out after you've listened to this show. Here Comes the Guillotine's actually got a warning, like a parental guidance warning type thing. I don't know if this needs it or not. I'm too far out the loop. But it did get a wee bit dark because we started talking about wrestling and stuff like that, and Chris Benoit and things like that. So I thought what we'd do is we'd start the show with my review of the Mr. McMahon Netflix series, if you're interested. It's just a wee 10-minute talk about what I thought about the documentary, and me also sharing the story of the time I got booed by about 800 wrestling fans, and also another time where I got clotheslined out the ring by Grado, the wrestler Grado, and the actor Grado, and the TV personality Grado. So if you want to hear that, then that's coming up right now. If you don't want to hear that, then just skip 10 minutes. As always, before we start, there is no sponsors, there's no adverts, there's no funding, because we are powered purely by our patrons. Thank you to everyone who supports us on there at patreon.com/ you call that radio. Zero adverts on this show because of you. Well, one little advert, actually. It's our 5th birthday party this Saturday, the 5th of October. So if you want to come along to see us celebrate 5 years of this podcast, 5 years of hosting events under You Call That Radio, then do come along. We've got Jinx Lennon flying all the way over from Ireland. We've got Gordy Duncan's comeback gig. He's not played in years. So we've got that happening. We've got Hugh Reid and the Velvet Underpants, Glasgow legends. And speaking of Glasgow legends, we've also got Unholy Frankenstein, which is Chris the Mighty Sparrowhawk and the legendary Joe Bones' new project, which is kind of like a spoken word electro thing. It's amazing, man. And an up-and-comer, the up-and-coming Brenda, who are a three-piece female synth punk band who are absolutely smashing it just now. They're actually currently on tour with Franz Ferdinand. So go and do that. If you're a patron, check out your messages, because you've actually got a discount code if you want to come along. If not, just go to Skiddle and type in YCTR 5th birthday party, and I hope to see you all there. So let's I hope you really enjoy this interview. I certainly enjoyed it. It's Christopher MacArthur Boyd. But first, that's in 10 minutes. Fast forward 10 minutes if you just want to get to the interview. Otherwise, this is my review of the Mr. McMahon Netflix documentary. Radio. You call that radio? Live on You Call That Radio, and now we are going to discuss Vince McMahon, namely the Mr. McMahon documentary on Netflix, which is about the billionaire supervillain Vince McMahon of WWE, WWF fame. And the first thing you notice when you watch this documentary is his face. Look at his face. What has he done to his face? That's the first thing you notice. Now, moving on to the actual documentary, it tells the story of a young man who took over his father's local wrestling company and turned it into an international franchise, leaving a trail of dead wrestlers, lawsuits and alleged assaults in his wake. And I say alleged because I don't want Vince to sue You Call That Radio, because he would win. I don't want his franchise suing my franchise. 3,600 YouTube subscribers, can't be wrong. He always wins. And if he thinks he's not going to win, then he just pays millions of pounds or dollars in out-of-court settlements. In fact, the only case he lost was when the World Wildlife Fund made him change the name of his company from WWF to WWE. I'm sure he shot a lot of pandas that day. He looks like the kind of guy that would uppercut a giraffe. I mean, look at his face. Look at Vince McMahon's face. For wrestling fans, there wasn't much new information. And as someone who's not really watched wrestling since I was about 12, I knew about 95% of it. And that's not to say I'm not a wrestler, because I am. People always ask me, were you not a wrestler? Yes, I was a wrestler. Otherwise, I wouldn't have this. Shout-outs to Lucha Libre, big up Galavision. So I'm a wrestler. I'm as much as a wrestler as Donald Trump is. People keep talking about how Donald Trump was in the wrestling. I get booed by everyone in the wrestling. Donald Trump was the good guy. I get booed, which makes me more of a wrestler than Donald Trump. And I'm happy to meet Donald Trump at WrestleMania, whatever number is coming up. And I will not fuck at you. I will not fuck at Donald Trump in a wrestling ring. That line I actually just said there, I haven't watched wrestling since I was about 12. That got me booed on stage in front of an ICW crowd. And I was actually trying to give a compliment. As in, I stopped watching wrestling when I was 12, but ICW had a kind of underground ECW vibe that I really liked. They used the Gyro Baby song Overhead in the West End as an entrance theme to one of the wrestlers, and then I was invited to go to the Classic Grand. It was sold out Classic Grand, probably about, I'm guessing, 700 people there. So we performed the Jeremy Kyle song, which I think was the official theme song of the annual Square Go. And then I said, I stopped watching wrestling when I was 12. And before I finished my sentence, everyone started booing me. And I was like, oh, for fuck's sake, man. But then, as a fan of wrestling, the theatre of it all, I realised that I was the bad guy. I was a heel. I was getting booed. So then I tried to jump into the ring. And I think I fell over the rope. It's not as easy as it looks. And then everyone was kind of laughing at me. And I just, you know, I started, we were doing the gyros and song, and I was just going, get a job, get a job, get a job. Get a real job, get a mortgage. You know, just doing that. And I can remember there was somebody with a screen, one of those, like, screens that you type it in and then you can read the screen. And it said that we sucked. Well, it's a very Americanized slagging, but it is an Americanized sport. And then I think actually the only time I've ever did a mic drop, which I apologized for, by the way, because I think Billy Kirkwood said, make some noise for the gyro babies. And I just dropped the mic and walked off stage and we get booed, boo, boo. So I had to drop the mic. It was just natural. I didn't mean to do it. It just felt the right thing to do because I was in Ric Flair mode or something. And then also, yes, I also wrestled again. It was a family day for the Clutha. And I don't think it was planned. Someone can correct me in the comments. I don't exactly know how this happened, but the yellow movement, we were all dressed in yellow and we all attacked Grado. And I don't think Grado knew that was going to happen. I think he was late coming from work. If I remember rightly, correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I remember it is that Dallas, to get Grado back for being late, sent a bunch of the yellow movement in to attack him. And Grado just started clotheslining cunts. And I think he punched me in the rib or something and flung me out the ring. I remember getting actually a sore rib. So, people that say it's fake, come on. It was Sayre. They weren't messing about. But it's not all about me, it's about Vince McMahon. If you're already a wrestling fan, there's nothing new information. If you're not a wrestling fan, it's a really good documentary. Or if you're maybe somebody that just hasn't been keeping up to date over the last 20 years, you maybe watched this when you were 12 and then you stopped watching it, then there's a lot of stuff's happened. Chris Benoit had an incident. It was a Chris Benoit incident. It was Owen. I don't want to give any spoilers. No spoilers here. But Chris Benoit had an incident. It was a Chris Benoit incident. There was an Owen Hart incident. Multiple lawsuits. Multiple allegations. Not many wrestlers make it past 40. They are more rock and roll than rock and roll. The pain they put themselves through as a form of entertainment is crazy. And then you've got the sex, drugs, and alcohol that goes with it. Everyone's on painkillers. Because unlike musicians, they actually have to go to the gym the next day. They usually have to drive for about 7 hours, go to the gym, and then get beaten up again. So everybody's in pain, everyone's on painkillers, probably coke, definitely steroids. And for me, the storylines are funny. I have a great deal of respect for the athletic ability. I don't really watch the wrestling as such, but what I do like is the shoot interviews, which is a genre on YouTube. You can look it up, shoot interviews. And that's when ex-wrestlers bitch about other ex-wrestlers. And it's great because you watch their side of the story and then you watch the other guy talking about the other guy. And you try to figure out who's the lying bastard and who's all right. And as they said multiple times, there is a very thin line between reality and the theatre. The reality gets blood all the time, which they said multiple times. But check it out, man. If you've never heard any of these stories before, it's a wild and crazy story from the 80s, from the right through. I will knock fuck out of Donald Trump in a wrestling ring. I get booed. He didn't get booed. I get booed, which means I'm better. And also got clotheslined by Grado and hurt my rib. So I'm a wrestler. And I'll knock fuck out of Donald Trump at WrestleMania. Nae bother. Give me a shout. But the most interesting thing about the Netflix documentary for me was that if you are going to watch it with this in mind, in the context of Netflix have bought the rights to Monday Night Raw, which will be streaming every Monday on Netflix from January onwards. So they've spent a lot of money on this. So the documentary is basically an advert for the WWE. But they kind of throw Vince McMahon under the bus a bit. But not that much. Considering all the things he's done, it's not that much. Nobody really, none of the wrestlers really say anything bad about him, really. Because they're scared that Vince McMahon could come back. Because in the world of wrestling, Vince McMahon could come back. Even at this stage, you know, he's cancelled. But in the world of wrestling, he's not really cancelled. And the more unpopular you get, the more heat you get, the more you get booed. The more you get booed, the more money you make. And there's a part of me that thinks Vince McMahon's in this. Because I'm sure he wants his billion-dollar corporation. He sold all his shares, apparently. He's got no say in it anymore. It's his daughter and Triple H that have taken it to the new era. There's a part of me that thinks he went, you know what, in order to save the company, just tell my story and throw me under the bus a bit. Not too much, but throw me under the bus a wee bit. Let this be a success. Let WWE be a success. And then I'll come back at WrestleMania and get booed. And that could happen. Do you think that could happen? Have you watched the documentary? What did you think? I'd love to hear your opinion if you're a wrestling fan, but I'd also especially like to hear your opinion if you don't know anything about wrestling and you've watched it for the first time. Because I would imagine if you didn't know any of these stories, you'd be watching that going, what the fuck is this, man? If you call that radio, let me know what you think in the comments. This is where most people say like, subscribe, and join my Patreon. But that's something that I would never do. Bye. Radio. You call that radio.
Radio.
It's You Call That Radio TV. We are live with Christopher MacArthur Boyd on You Call That Radio. I think we can go live to him straight away. He's ready. CMB in the house.
Yo, what's happening, mate?
No, let me thank you very much for joining me on what has turned out to be the sunniest day of the year.
It's beautiful, man. Did you get out?
I got out for an hour. I got out my cupboard for an hour. And it was great. And it felt... I don't know if you can feel it on the other. It's a historic day because it's 10 years since the referendum.
Sure,
could you feel,
yeah.
Could you feel the history?
I didn't really feel the history. No. I felt the sun.
You felt the sun?
It felt dead. Today felt... I took loads of pictures today. I was Easter House train station and the sun was setting kind of golden hour, like about an hour ago. It's still out, but now all the... You look at the window and all the everything's kind of glowing orange, just like proper gold now. But I was looking the direction from Easter House train station down to Garrow train station, and the rails, the sun was hitting the rails, and there was like, I don't know what they are, if it's pollen or flies, but something was floating in the air, and I was just like, it's cracking into it. I forgot that 10 years ago, the country shat itself. It was like a beautiful moment.
Yeah. Well, Glasgow didn't shit itself, just to clarify, but... The rest of the country absolutely shat it. But, I mean, it was maybe the right decision because things have went so smoothly since, haven't they? It's been we've had a really good run since that time.
It's been a class decade.
It's been a really, really positive political decade of greatness that's been happening. And thanks for not just going to a beer garden because, you know, I was going to message and go, should we just patch this and go to a beer garden?
Should we go to West Brewery and just get absolutely steamed?
By the way, just for anyone thinking about going to a beer garden, it's too late. You've missed it. That was the last of the sunshine. You can get a beer garden next year.
I hate beer gardens, man. I hate beer gardens. Why? Full of wasps. If you think you can drink a cider and not have a wasp in your glass drinking it with you, you're wrong.
My partner for Fife, Jo, she says she can't believe when she moved to Glasgow how her definition of what a beer garden is. You know, just like, I went, I'm in the beer garden, come and meet me in the beer garden. And it's just, it's a chair.
Yeah.
It's a chair outside.
It's a car park with some garden furniture in it, really.
On a busy motorway. Well, maybe we can make this... Like a kind of beer garden vibe. Maybe I could get a plant. Let me get a plant pot. 2 seconds.
Plant pot it up, man. Plant pot it up. Try to look about, see if I've got anything. Nah. Do I have anything that's kind of beer gardeny? Not really. I'm not much of a beer garden person. Oh, wow. Look at that. What's that?
I can't claim to be a florist.
No, I don't think you can.
I don't know, it's jaggy.
Aye, it looks like it's the result of the Japanese art of flower arranging.
That might not be, it's kind of like a disco ball acorn.
Uh-huh, a pine cone.
Well, thanks for joining me in the last beer garden of the year. I'm shitting it because I've got one more festival this weekend and this is a bad woman.
Whoa.
Why are we getting a nice 22 degrees? We're hot on Ibiza in parts of Scotland.
Yeah.
And I'm about to go in a 5-hour drive to the back end of East Midlands to play a festival and there's a storm coming, obviously.
There's a storm coming, yeah. Yeah. This is the type of weather where, I mean, the sky's electric blue and everything's glowing and there's not a cloud in the sky today. It's beautiful, and that means thunder and lightning is just in the corner.
100%.
100%.
Scary times. You could say scary times indeed. CMB is joining us today because he's got a massive tour on. And I like the way that you've not updated the May ones.
Nah.
Just which looks like... I think you had all this to do by the end of the year. But I do that as well, man. I just keep it so it looks more full. And
it
also...
makes you look busier, doesn't it? It makes you look like you've got more on when you're like, I'm in Newcastle in May, which happened already.
And also what I did was recently. I've just changed it. I can't find it. But what I did was for our tour this summer is I started scoring them out as we were doing them.
That's cool.
Well, I had to because two of them sold out, man. There's no way I'm letting that go.
No.
I don't get that many sold out gigs, man. So when it sells out, you win that sold out sign.
I have an updated poster that says Inverness sold out. Oh, and I've got Leeds sold out, and I'm like, fucking yes, man. Sold out in Leeds. What a world we're living in. So one of the Dundees is sold out as well.
Oh, well done.
Two tickets left for the second Dundee show.
My mate Snook, who actually signed up as a YouTube member, came up as a notification there. But Snook said he's seen you in Cumbernauld on Friday. He said,
yes, man. Yeah,
what was Cumbernauld all about?
Cumbernauld was red hot, man.
Yeah.
It always has been, always will be. Their shopping centre created a dark energy in that town, and if you're an artist there, you can harness it. I used to have a girlfriend in St Andrews, and I would always get the X25 or something, the megabus, and it would go out past Cumbernauld, and I didn't have a smartphone. I was quite a late adopter to the smartphone. So I would always just look at a Cumbernauld shopping centre and what's that place that's going to close down at some Andrew Refinery, Grangemouth? I would look at Cumbernauld shopping centre and Grangemouth Refinery and go, what are these places? These are just mad places. Cumbernauld shopping centre is like a mad Soviet attempt at scenic centre or something.
It's I got in trouble there the other day because there's a charity that works there, and I was down to do some festival stuff, and here it is here. And this is like, I think this is from, like, it's like a, I don't want to get done with the copyright, but it's like...
I think we'll be all right.
The Cumbernauld copyright machine. But welcome to Cumbernauld, a town for the future.
Man. Look at that.
It was, obviously, now it's... but this was, back in those days... Everybody wanted to go to Cumbernauld because it was a town of the future.
It was a town of the future.
Look, we're trying to find the shopping centre thing.
I've got a great book called Braw Concrete that is a kind of history of brutalist architecture in Glasgow, and I highly recommend it if you're into all that pish. I really like it. I just took a picture of the Scottish Ambulance Centre that's in town next to Kilcaddon Station. It's like a classic. It's beautiful. Oh, look at that, man. That's the brutalest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Well, I was
supermarket.
Yeah, so what they did was, for people that don't know, Cumbernauld just got... They just decided to put everything in the same thing. So, yeah, I've got... So I was there on the fifth floor the other day, a couple of months ago, and I went out of the sort of balcony, I don't know what you'd call it.
Yeah.
I was trying to take pictures, and then I got this crazy guy came out and went, you've got no permission to do that. And he says, delete it. And I was like, okay, I will.
It's in the
cloud, mate. So I got into trouble, but I've still got the footage, obviously. But yeah, next door was the library, and the building I was in was the old town hall. Mm-hmm. And I think that's getting renovated by Mugstock into some sort of, hopefully, a music venue at some point. But so the town hall's on the fifth floor next door to the library.
Yeah.
And it seemed like a good idea at the time. And now it wins like the worst town in the world all the time. It's a bit harsh in Cumbernauld.
It's a harsh town.
Yeah, it's harsh too. People come from all around the world to see the sights of Cumbernauld. We're going back to the tour.
Cumbernauld was class, man.
So Cumbernauld is good. You've got this. You've done this.
There used to be a theatre in Cumbernauld Theatre, and it was like a really run down. It was amazing. It was community funded. It was brilliant. Community funded. And used to be gigs there. Used to do stand up there, and it was. Then I got with Phil Kay there, and he just rocked up with a wooden staff. I don't know if he had shoes on, and he stuck the staff on the roof of the door. Went in, done half an hour stand up, came out, grabbed the staff, walked off again. I was like, this guy's fucking mental. And that was like a wee cottage, but now they've got this place, Lantern House, which is, I think, kind of community focused. And it's like a high school, secondary school, fucking cinema, theatre, and like a community space, and it's brilliant. I think more comedians should play it.
You did the Tollbooth as well. That's quite a cool venue.
Yeah, man. I've never been there before. I've never been in Tollbooth before. It was that was on Saturday, so it was Cumbernauld, Stirling, And it used to be a jail, I think. This,
That's what I meant.
the dressing room's shaped, still shaped like a jail. Unfortunately, I was trying to take a shite, and they've kept the ability for people. So I was using the bathroom in
I thought you were going to say they kept your shit.
I've kept my shite in a glass jar.
A historic day for Stirling.
Historic thing for Stirling. Because we call the boys Naratoli.
Don't flush that, mate. We could be doing, we need that.
My opening act is because it's like a jail, there was like, you had to have constant access to be able to see in, and my pal took a picture of me doing a shite over the top of the toilet cubicle. So, highly recommend that to any comedians who want any people to know their shite in peace.
Fort William the Mora. That's a beautiful place.
Yeah, man.
Are you driving up? What's how you?
Yeah, my pal Roscoe, he's opening for me on basically the whole tour. No Aberdeen and no Dundee because he's banned for the places, but he's going to. We're going to go on a wee tour. So it's Fort William, Portree, Inverness, Gala Shields. Inverness to Gala Shields is an absolutely mad bit of booking. I have so much respect for Beyond Presents, an absolutely fantastic booking organisation for stand-up in the Highlands and Islands of Scotland. Do they do brilliant work? However, I don't know who decided they would be Inverness to Gala Shields, which is basically fucking Thurso to Newcastle. It's just a mad, but I don't. That's like a 6-hour drive. It's like so long.
My Cars is brilliant though. You played there
It's
before.
amazing. Yeah, I opened for Susan McCabe there last year. She had me. Basically, my last year of my life was just opening for Susan McCabe and opening for Frankie Boyle on tour. So I'd done
Not a
that
bad
for
way
a year.
to spend your life as a comedian. Two of the
I
best.
really, yeah, two of the best in Scotland and two of the best in the UK, I would say.
And for people that don't know, the Here Comes the Guillotine podcast, which is the three of yous, that's absolutely brilliant, man. I'm loving it. Here
Thank you
Comes the
so
Guillotine.
much.
And you're rattling through them. There's quite a lot of them now. Because I didn't listen for a
Yeah.
couple of weeks and I was surprised at how many episodes you've done. Because I started listening at the start and then I've been catching up over the last week. So I get the vibe that you're just kind of doing it like in between shows or what's happening?
I mean, Frankie and Susie are so busy with their careers. Susie's like one of the most in-demand comedians in the country, and Frankie's like a national treasure. So it's just whenever they're no at it, we can just nip into the studio and record a few. It's been great. It was supposed to be just them two, and they were going to just do a podcast about assassinations, Sirhan Sirhan, and Jack Ruby, and all the boys, all the good boys over there who kept shooting people and being shot. It was supposed to be about that, but then they realised, oh, we need loads of research, so we'll just get CMB in and talk shite for an hour every week, and it's much better.
And how did you end up meeting Frankie Boyle and Susie McCabe and stuff just from
I
performing?
guess just the great thing about the Scottish comedy circuit is like there's not that many places to do it. So if you are the best comedian in the country, like Frankie, you're going to end up on a lineup with the worst comedian in the country, me. So, yeah, like the Stand Comedy Club. Like I think music may be slightly different because, like in music, your openers tends to get decided by promoters and stuff, doesn't it? But in comedy, you often find yourself on lineups with literally the best because they need places to try out new stuff. So I met him doing a charity gig for Trussell Trust, I think. It was a homeless organisation in Edinburgh. It was like a fundraiser. So I met him ages and ages and ages and ages ago. I remember because it was the day after, I don't know if you remember that time, a naked guy fell out the window of the Central Hotel at Central Station. Remember that?
I vaguely remember this.
A guy fell out. Don't get
Was you all right? Was you all
the
right?
video up. Sorry, getting the cup. No, mate. No. He was not right. He
Was
died.
not all right? Okay,
But
okay.
it was potentially the least all right guy I've ever seen in my life because he was dangling upside down and he landed his head, I think. But terrible
Fuck.
thing. But I admit that was the topic of conversation the first time I met him. And fair to say, we had a good laugh about it.
Yeah, and Well, it's also got it's some small talk to make in it, you know what I mean? Better than gonna. Oh, it's hotter than Ibiza in September. It's something to talk about in it.
Yeah. Did you see that naked guy?
Did you see the
It's an interesting hanger. Listen, it's an absolute. Obviously, if any of that guy's family's out there, and they're worried that hey, don't make fun of that guy. But I think even if it was your family, you would have to admit it was quite funny.
And from there, you've been touring with Frankie for the last year. How long's the podcast been going for?
We started recording it a year ago, but I think it only started coming out in January. So, it's not been that long coming out, but it feels like we've been doing it for ages because we kind of bulk recorded that. We've done pilots and stuff. I think that's a good idea with podcasts is to put out, make a couple episodes and then no
Let
show them
anyone hear it.
anybody.
Yeah.
Don't let anybody hear it. Just there and then listen back yourself and go, oh, that's shite.
I don't
I will
even
never
release.
say that again.
I don't release the. I make loads of podcasts just myself, and I never release them because they're the good ones. I just keep them, store them for my retirement. I'm like, that's way too good to go on for public, man.
Yeah,
That's
that's
way too good.
wasted on content.
And so with regards to you, because now you're. I noticed when I was doing the promo for this, because obviously you were on the show 4 year ago, 4.5 year ago. It was actually April 2020, which
Was it?
old aye.
An interesting time.
Because I double checked it. I was like, how long ago has that been? It must have been a couple of years now. And I was like, oh, fuck, it's 4.5 year. 4.5 year ago.
No, I mean, I remember I was one of the first people in Scotland. I had COVID like before. I don't think it was called COVID
An
yet.
early adopter.
And I remember I had to phone up the comedy festival in March and go, I'm really sorry, I don't think I can do my show. I'm coughing up my lungs. I was like out in the street, fucking, I still smoking at the time. I was just coughing my lungs up in the gutter. And I thought, I should probably, I'd heard about COVID a wee bit, been in the news. And I was like, I probably should have done this.
There's a
So
bit of
in
a, there's a,
April, I would
so
have
yeah,
been.
you it did you did know there was a bit of a flu going about. There's a bit of a bug going about. Yeah,
But
I got it for the first time in May. I got it for the first
this
time in May
year?
this year. I was just like, I do believe everyone. I believe
Yeah.
everyone's stories. I always believe people's stories. But I was like, I mean, fucking hell, it's 4.5 years for me. But I eventually got it, man, and it absolutely destroyed me, man. It was I had to do a gig about a week after it, and I was like, 2 days before the gig, I was like, I don't think I can. I've never cancelled a gig before as well, so if I cancel the gig, I'm cancelling not only the gig, but my
Your
band.
streak, yeah.
Not my band, I'm just cancelling, I'm
All
just quitting
right.
music, I've just quit music forever. There's no way I'm coming back for that. I just
Right.
quit it all. But yeah, it was bad, it was bad, but luckily it's not as bad as it was back in April 2020. We've
Yeah.
moved on from there. But what was
I
nice about.
remember that. That was good. That was a good interview. I liked it.
I've never watched any of the interviews back, but I always enjoy speaking to you. So I think it would have flown okay because obviously, especially in those times, was like some people just, when they stare at the camera, they just don't talk. And that can be a bit awkward. It can be quite awkward. But I was thinking I was promoting that. What I would like to do is, because now we're starting to repeat guests every so often, because obviously 4.5 years has passed, people have got new shit to promote. So I was going to anyway, maybe get some clips of the old one that we could have watched together or used it as promo, but I couldn't be arsed really.
Yeah,
Well,
sure.
it seemed like a lot of work.
That
But
does seem like a lot of work. It seems like something you would get somebody else to do for you.
I don't have a budget for it, but I'd love to have a team. I love it. You always hear me saying we as if I was talking about what you call a radio. There's a big team behind it. We've got new plans. We've got lots of stuff coming up next month, and I'm just lying. It's just me all the time. But I was thinking, so my other backup plan was to promote this show was, right, okay, he's got a podcast with Frankie Boyle, and I mentioned it once. I didn't tag him or anything, but are you starting to get that stage now where people are trying to promote you? Obviously, they've got these little independent venues. Are they starting to say things like, Frankie Boyle's pal?
I mean, I try and avoid that just because I think
Of
it's
course you would.
cringe.
Of course you don't want it. Of course you wouldn't want to do it. But you like
It
wrestling.
sells tickets. If it
You
sells
like
tickets.
wrestling though, didn't you?
I love wrestling, man.
Right. Well, back in the day, I remember going to the Irvine Magnum. I must have been about 8 or 9 year
Sure.
old. And it was a big poster. And it was the British Bulldog, which at that time, whatever age I was when British Bulldog was in his prime.
Teddy
And I
Boy
was
Smith, did he have the dreads?
Davey Boy Smith.
Davey Boy Smith. Teddy's his son, sorry.
Yeah, Davey Boy Smith, but it was no. The thing was, this is the beauty of it. He wasn't even playing. It was a poster of the British Bulldog, and went, the British Bulldog's coming to Irvine. Wow! But then it actually, when you look closer, it was the British Bulldog's wee cousin
Oh
in
my
small
God,
print.
no.
And it was actually, but the wee cousin was actually the Dynamite Kid, who was actually, in hindsight, was a legend, but I didn't know anything about it. So, you know.
No, Dynamite Kid's fantastic. He was a big influence on Chris Benoit. The less said about him, the better, but cracking wrestler.
Wait, do you buy into the Chris Benoit conspiracy theories?
What? What?
that he's innocent.
Vince McMahon. I thought it was going to be like, oh, he was an alien or something.
No. Just that Chris Benoit was innocent. But there's a lot of people saying that Vince
at times, that guy. There's a compilation of it, and it's every time he gets slapped in the head with a chair in his career. And he wasn't, you know, you're supposed to kind of put your hands up the last minute to kind of catch the chair a wee bit. He wasn't putting his hands up. His arms were akimbo, man, and he was just taking them full force. His big move was the diving headbutt. He would just jump head first onto the ground, and he would miss a lot. Yeah.
So just for people that don't actually know what we're talking about, Chris Benoit, there was an incident.
There was an incident.
Yeah, Chris Benoit, there was an incident. Everyone says he was a dead nice guy. Got some head injury. He got a bit of a head injury, and then there was an incident. And some people are saying that it was Vince McMahon. It was all set up. Vince McMahon took him out. Do you think
it was interesting at the time? Because I don't know if you watched it at the time, 2004, 2005. But Vince McMahon had a storyline that exact time, which was Vince McMahon was in a limo and the limo blew up. Weekend, Chris Benoit had an incident, and that really took. And then Vince McMahon had to come out and go, "It was a storyline. This is all fake. Sorry to hear about this. Yeah, this is actually real.
That's fake and this is real." And a lot of people did think it was a 1-2 buckle my shoe, and it was all part of the act. But it wasn't. Yeah. Stuart's asking me to tell us about it. I'm not going to tell about it. Just do that in your own time. Chris Benoit conspiracy theories. I'm not going down.
There was an incident.
Just trust me, trust me. There was definitely an incident. You can check.
There was
it out.
A series of unfortunate incidents.
Yeah, we're not going to. I don't want to go too much into Chris Benoit, but I would like to ask you about Vince McMahon, because obviously,
he's the kind of guy
that would have set Chris Benoit up. I just can't see what he had to gain on it, because obviously the company got a lot of flack for that and stuff. Aye. But Vince McMahon's Netflix documentary is finally coming out next week. 26.
Yeah, man. I mean, I just hope that the thing is, wrestlers love him. Like, there's a video there, and it was Mick Foley, who was Mankind. This is in 2024. Foley, who was Mankind, and Rikishi. And they're just going, he was a complicated guy, and you're like, Rikishi. Not that I expect Rikishi to have the most, you know. I don't think Rikishi's going to have the most complex understanding as sexual assault, given that his big finishing move was rubbing his ass on people's faces in the corner. The inventor of the jumping arse attack. Isn't he going to be the most
the stink
subtle understanding?
Right, okay. We're going to move on to this in a minute, but I'll show you the stink face first. Just so you
get the stink face.
Get the stink face.
I just remember getting WWE SmackDown, Here Comes the Pain for the PlayStation 2, and being so impressed because the graphics rendered Rikishi's arse cellulite in such detail that was impossible in the PlayStation 1, you know. Obviously, we all dreamed of it.
Right, that's the stink face.
That's the stink face.
So he's like not convinced that Vince McMahon has done anything untoward, but this guy did that move at least once a night
for about 10 years. Yeah.
Sometimes multiple times.
Definitely. So I don't think he would necessarily. But then wrestlers love him because he made them all millionaires.
Some of them became millionaires.
If you're listening to this and you haven't looked into Vince McMahon's myriad of crimes. Up there with Chris Benoit in terms of incidents, really terrible.
But I mean, Chris Benoit was actually sound. He had a bad day, But everything had been.
I don't know, man. If you want to see a good interview, Paul London and Brian Kendrick, who were a tag team, they were the Hooligans in 2006. They'd done a shoot interview, which are kind of like out of character interview, where they sit down and tell stories about being in 2003, 2002. They were Chris Benoit's traveling partner, and they would go, they were kind of seen as like new guys. So they went, hang about with Chris, and he'll kind of show you the ropes. And the stories about him are fucking mental. Like, he would try and convince him to, like, seduce waitresses, and then he would go in the hotel cupboard and just watch them. He wanted to, like, watch them.
So that's Benoit. Sorry,
but that was Benoit. He was a horny wee guy as well.
Okay, so I got the impression that everyone said he was a sound guy. He took one... But he literally... I watched the video footage of him wrestling the week before. And it must have been some sort of autopilot, muscle memory. But you wouldn't know anything was that wrong with him. And then, obviously, there was the incident. And then he was gone. Yeah. But yeah, I thought it was... So he may have always been a bit of a fan, so it's all right.
I think he was just an odd wee guy who... I mean, do you know when you hear about like what Jake LaMotta was like towards the end of his life? Like, Doug Stanhope has a great routine where he visits Raging Bull. He visits the Raging Bull, Jake LaMotta, and he's like, you know, he's no there. Because it's interesting that we kind of ascribe such wisdom sometimes to, like, boxers and stuff. Because obviously boxing is an art form and, you know, it's a sport. But at the same time, it is also being punched in the head professionally. So these people, MMA fighters, people who look up to MMA fighters and boxers is kind of like, you know... bastions of wisdom. You're like, I don't know, man. They've been hitting the head a lot, and that's not the part of your body that you want to get hit too many times.
You've mentioned Doug Stanhope.
Know that I want to say any boxers or MMA fighters.
I heard that you said you called out every boxer, every MMA fighter. You called them all out. I heard that. It's fine. We'll move on. We'll swiftly move on. You mentioned Doug Stanhope. We'll talk about influences.
That's maybe the stupidest thing I've ever done.
We'll just stop. We'll move away from the wrestling. And one final point in the wrestling before we move on is because obviously I went away from it for years, but I've always kind of kept. I love the shoot interviews, man. I love watching these guys talking about, especially people that I grew up with in the 90s or the early 2000s. The way that they bitch about each other, then you'd find an interview with the other guy to hear his side of the story and figure out who's in the wrong and who's in the right. But yeah, obviously Drew Galloway, good air, sir, boy.
Incredible wrestler.
Good air, sir, boy. He's like writing about it as well.
World champion.
I've been kind of paying attention to that because he got back involved. Mm. But why would you feel, final point on it is like with Triple H coming in, because obviously I've been away for so long, it's hard for me to kind of differentiate. Is it getting better? Is it staying the same? What would you say? Is it going in the right direction?
It's going in the right direction, I think. Triple H is doing some cool stuff. I think he's a bit of a strange guy. I think it's a bit inside baseball, but I think you look at the way he's treated certain ethnic minorities over the last couple of decades, you know, his relationship with Booker T, and then the way he's booked some people, and when he was the booker of NXT, which is the kind of promotional league, there was a guy, I can't remember his name, Miles, I think was one his first name, and he quit because he said that he just found that the way Triple H booked the promotion to be a bit racist, and be interested in seeing how that going to... Ultimately, the thing you're being compared to is Vince McMahon, who is, as we'll all find out via Netflix in about a week, one of the worst human beings of all time. Like, I mean, genuinely, he is an absolute car crashy guy. Like, do you know that way where they say power, what is it, power corrupts?
Power corrupts.
And absolute power corrupts, absolutely. He was in charge of an entire genre of performance.
The craziest.
Ruined so many lives, you know.
The craziest genre of performance because... You know, that is rock and roll. You know, people talk about rock and roll musicians. They don't have to go to the gym in the morning and then knock fuck each other and then take the drink and the sex drinks and drugs.
Aye.
But on top of that, they're also taking everything else. And that's why not many make it. So it's like wrestling beats poetry when it comes to drinking.
You know,
Well, it's
I've had
actually.
a few drinks with some slam poets, but I do think that wrestlers are a bit
Well,
more of
comedy's basically like slam poetry that, except you don't bother making things rhyme.
No, exactly.
It's just well, it sounds easy. So just basically doing poems that don't rhyme.
Yeah.
Who's the worst though? Which is I'm more interested in sort of, cause obviously a comedy versus music. What is the crack these days with comedians? Are they getting on it? Is there a problem with the swally or the anything like that? Or has everyone kind of chilled out?
I think it's kind of just like kind of culture in general, where because the what would you say? How would you describe things compared to like the 90s and the 2000s? I think like just not even in terms of just in drinking, but in terms of like the housing market and like what you can do with your life. All the everything's narrowed a wee bit. Do you know what I mean? So I think the current generation of comedians, certainly my generation, who came in. You know, on the tail end of the housing crash, and then 10 years out of their career, or 8 years out of their career, went through COVID, and now there's whatever's happening just now. Do you know what I mean? Like all the margins are a bit tighter. So, I mean, we're all the older comedians think that we're a lot of pussies, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm a lightweight, certainly. So yeah, nah. Maybe I think the next crew will be a bunch of absolute head cases. Though I've met some. There's a wee guy from Cumbernauld called Jack Trainer. And he's really, really funny, but I think he'll be in the jail in about 3 years. Shout out to Jack Trader. He's really, really. Get him on this. You'll talk to him. He lived in China for a wee bit, and he's a Cumbernauld comedian. He just got fired by his agent, and the only other comedian that's been fired by that agent was Frankie. And I think Jack Trader's gonna be. He's really, really good. He's brilliant, but he's a fucking nut job.
I've got him. I've got him here.
Jack Trainer, you ever seen him?
I've recognized him.
He's good. He's my pick, man. I think he's going to be a big star.
Amazing. If he doesn't get the jail, he will be a big star. But I've always quite liked that though, the idea of like, you know, I remember I used to come up with bullshit like, you know, I'll be dead or a millionaire by the time I'm 30, and then you turn 30 and you're neither. You're like, fuck.
100%, yeah. But I Jack, man, he's crack. I went down to Red Raw last night. I like just going down to hang out sometimes and seeing who the new comedians are. And there was a lassie from Zimbabwe. She was incredible. Susan Riddle was on. She brought her Labrador Annie. They were there. It was brilliant. All the new comedians they're cracking. And they seem a wee bit more party animals than my generation, who were kind of a bit tamer, I think.
What is talk about comedy influences? It's a boring
Oh,
question,
yeah,
but
sure.
I always love to hear it. I love to hear a top five or something like that, or a top three.
No, so I kind of started in 2013, I think. And that was a kind of age of the people that I was like, obviously, I grew up with Billy Connolly, and when I was a teenager, Kevin Bridges was a wee bit like the Beatles in the East End, I think, and certainly just in Glasgow in general. People, I'd be at house parties, you'd be at Empties, and people would go stick on the Kevin Bridges bit about Empties, do you know what I mean? And that was a big, it was interesting because you could just kind of look at it and go, oh, you can do that if you go to the Stand and you do Red Raw, you can be a comedian. But then I was a wee bit more into John Mulaney, Hannibal Buress, Kyle Kinane were three comedians in Chicago. I've never been to Chicago in my puff, but for some reason, they three, I was really drawn to them. Doug Stanhope, Maria Bamford, all people like that. Louis C.K. He obviously, this was before he started jacking off all the time, or before
No, I think he
everybody
was
knew he
doing
was
it.
jacking off all the
I
time. He
was
was
just
then
I
at the
no,
time.
that was in his prime. I'd been in his prime jacking off time. He just he's he the days are gone now, as far as I know.
He had his incident, you know, so
Yeah,
we've
multiple
all
incidents.
had one.
But I'll tell you what, he's the comeback. He's fun, but he's came back from that,
She came
and
back.
he's came back. But he kind of got sort of flung in the middle of a lot of Me Too stuff. I think it was Bill Burr that said it started getting to the point where it was just bad dates that were getting flung in the middle of it. And it's like,
Maybe, but I know I disagree with that. But I think you can be a fucked up guy and you can not really be good with talking to lassies and all that type of stuff. But then, if you are then having your agent contact these women and go, it would be better for your career if you never spoke about this. I mean, that's fucked up.
I didn't
you know
that. So, I don't really know what to
do. Look into his manager. And,
right, okay. So there was
a lot
fixer.
Of people dropped him.
He had a fixer, Louis C.K. All I knew about it was is that he was wanking into plant pots. There's not really any other way to say it. And I didn't know the full story.
There's a documentary about it called Sorry that was at the Glasgow Film Festival there. And I recommend, if you're interested in the topic, I'd recommend looking into it. It's, unfortunately, he was my hero growing up. And I had opinions in my head that was just jokes, he would say. Like, he was my absolute hero. And then all that stuff came out and I was like... And there's been a few people like that. You know, I was really into Woody Allen when I was a teenager. I'd done his films and I liked his stand-up. And obviously he's, you know, had his instance himself. So, it's interesting over the last couple of years. I'm trying not to put people on a pedestal anymore because it turns out they're all fucking...
Everyone's flawed and power corrupts and fame corrupts a lot as well.
Yeah.
You've got Louis C.K. who, I suppose, a lot of the older stuff that hasn't aged as well because the idea was that he was kind of playing a persona. He was making jokes. And then when you hear that, you're like, all right, that was just his actual thoughts, his way of life.
He was kind of a moralistic comedian. He was kind of like, here's what's wrong with the world. Here's what's wrong with people. Let's all try and be better. And if you're saying that, but you're also the guy who is like asking lassies to come back to your hotel room and then they're trying to leave and you're like at the door with your cock out, it's kind of like, can't really buy into you as America's dad anymore. Do you know what I mean? You're now...
He went in that kind of Bill Cosby moral thing. And the Bill Cosby was the, you know, he used to message people saying don't swear in your set.
Yeah, he used to, Eddie Murphy,
Eddie Murphy not to swear. Meanwhile, Dr. Cosby, who
it is that way, I think, in comedy, where if you have a really nice act, like if you're on stage and you're like a nice guy, you're an absolute monster backstage. Whereas if you're on stage and you're an absolute foul creature, you tend to be quite a nice person off stage.
But what about Louis C.K.? He wasn't that nice on stage. I mean, I think you're talking about the show was nice, but his stand-up comedy wasn't nice, was he?
No, it wasn't nice at all. No.
Sometimes you can be not nice on stage and you're also not nice in real life. Dave Grohl's getting it tight because he's the nice guy of rock and he had an affair.
It's any time somebody goes, I'm the nice guy, you go, hey. Do you know what I mean? Anytime someone's like, oh, I'm the nice guy, you're like, I don't know.
Doug Stanhope.
Yeah,
so
great guy.
As far as we know, he seems to be quite honest with his...
Oh, he's wrote books about all the stuff he's done, and he's spoken about
Digging Up Mother, was that what it's called?
Yeah.
I think...
He assisted his mom's suicide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like Benoit, she asked for it, but... Like, I mean, like, she did that. She wasn't asking for it. She was asking for help to euthanasia. It's a totally different thing for the Chris Benoit thing.
We think.
As far as you're aware, she's not available for comment at the moment. But Doug Stanhope, that book, I love the audiobook. And I think he's he's one of the few podcast comedians. Because obviously there's the Joe Rogan-verse thing, but there's just all these comedians that do podcasts. And they're not, in my opinion, that funny. But Doug Stanhope's maybe not in that world as much because he can't be arsed leaving his wee town, but
he just lives in his wee town. He's probably the best comedian, I would say. I used to work in my dad's hairdressers, and I would just kind of, on my lunch break, I just found I really didn't have a big interest in hair. And on my lunch break, I would just put in, like, I had an iPod Classic, and I downloaded loads of comedy albums. And I had Doug Stanhope, I think it's called Before He Turned the Gun on Himself. And I had a few other. And then he turned the gun on himself. And he had a bit. He had so many bits. And it's like, I think when your life is kind of shite, you listen to stuff like this and you listen to, for me, music like Slayer, or Kanye, you know, when I was younger. And I would listen to this really mental stuff. And it just kind of shocks you. out of how shit your life is, and it's like a door to like another way of living, and you just think it's exciting. And I just love that idea that you could be that, like we here comes a guillotine is we do some pretty mad stuff for a podcast, and it's like I just like the idea that you could be the wee gateway and happiness for somebody, because God, I mean, life's fucking shite most of the time, isn't it? So it's nice to have a wee spark or something.
As yeah, definitely not. I did have a warning at the start, not for families.
I don't know why they do that. What's that for? They're like, oh, it's for lawyers. I'm like, what? It's called Here Comes the Guillotine. Don't lie, I'm saying, you don't listen to it.
No, it's definitely, man. There's definitely bits where you're like, your mum laughing my head over, and I shouldn't have been laughing at that. But that's good comedy. It's that line of humour.
Yeah, I mean, Stanhope's just like, he really does the thing. I think Bill Burr does it very well as well. He kind of takes an impossible argument and then wins you over. Do you know what I mean? He'll just come in defense,
Is
completely
Bill Burr in it? Is Bill Burr in his
indefensible.
prime right now? Would you say Bill Burr is in his prime?
I think he was probably in his prime about 5 years ago, 6 years
Yeah.
ago. I really like his black and white special. That's me.
That's you. We're just talking about special, so I just thought I'd give a wee. I'll put a wee
Oh,
link
thanks
in the
very much,
comments.
yeah.
So this is
How many
one.
views
You've got
it's
40,000 in 7 months. That's good going, man.
Yes, man. I'll put
Open the.
Instagram hang up about
By the way, it's actually only 39,000, but I rounded you up because sometimes it takes a while to
it.
process. So you know, I've never.
Oh,
Some people,
thank you.
but you can tell a lot about a person if they under it. Ah, you're on about 35. I'm a wee bit over 35. Or so, and I'm 2,000 over 35. I'm 4,000 over 35. So nearly 40,000. £800 Guerrilla Media.
Oh yeah, they're great.
Who's what have you put in
They're a
about?
company. They're a kind of record company in America, and I couldn't believe it. They came to see me at the Fringe, and we worked out a deal to record it and put it out. So it's on Spotify and Apple Music and stuff as well. That's my first album. That's like my debut album. And I just love comedy specials. So I was buzzing, man, when we put that out. Recorded it at Monkey Bar Comedy in Edinburgh, which is brilliant. Brilliant place to
It's brilliant.
say things.
It's really good, honestly. Everyone check it out.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get people that are funny in real life and they just kind of get a good special. So it's good to actually know
Totally,
that I
man.
can actually say genuinely that it's a good special. It just doesn't seem to work for everyone. Who is it that I've seen? Because who's that? I like Tim Dillon's weekly thing.
I love
But
Tim Dillon.
yeah, I love
Yeah.
Tim Dillon. But I seen
I
it
gigged
because
with him in the Hug and Pint on Great Western Road
fuck
once.
off, the hugging fight.
Yeah, in
Fuck's
the
sake.
basement of a Thai vegan street food
That's it.
cafe.
The Rogan bump is real for him, man. I think he sold at the Academy or
Yeah,
something.
no, I mean he's one of the biggest comedians in the world, but a couple of years ago he came over to Glasgow for the he'd done the Stand and he'd done Blackfriars and he'd done the Hug and Pint. And I was
Did
on the bill with him. It was amazing.
you what about Mark Normand?
Never gigged with Mark Normand, but I do like his last special was unreal, man. He's a great comedian.
Yeah, I agree.
Sam Morrow is really good for the boys, I think.
Just, I agree that Martin Norman's a good comedian, but he did an impression of me. Do you want to hear Martin Norman's impression of me?
Yes.
Okay, this is Martin Norman, international comedian, doing an impression of me. Hold on, here we go.
And what did some guy did a YouTube thing about, like, I saw Norman, it's all Scott. I saw Norman, they fucking high, he got booed.
That's his impression of me.
It's not a
What about
strong point, the impression, is it?
German, but it was nothing, it was all love. It
He's
was just
all
basically
celebrity. I didn't like him, but it's not exactly the best Ayrshire accent I've ever had in my life. That guy needs to go to the Magnum Centre more often, man.
it was either me or it was CJ who was also from Ayrshire. CJ was on just explaining because a lot of people were saying that he got booed off stage and there was a lot of drama, and CJ came on, he's
Where
at the Academy,
did
and
he?
so CJ came on to explain it. The episode's on our channel if anyone wants to check it out. But basically, CJ is a fan of Martin Norman, as am I, but he was just explaining what happened. And it was, I think the problem was, is people were trying to heckle him and he had no idea what they were saying. And there's a
It's
communication
hard.
issue. It's.
I've had that in Newcastle, man. You're like, I don't know what you are saying right now.
What's the best echo you've had?
Best heckle? I don't know. I don't.
Do you wait? Do you enter? Do you welcome a heckle? Some people do, some people don't.
I see if I'm in the middle of a big bit. Like, if you're building momentum and you're building tension, and then somebody goes, oh, it'd be funny if I popped this just now. It's like, yeah, it would be. That's what I'm doing. I'm building up tension so as I can say the thing that makes everybody go, oh, I see what you were doing, you know? But if some guy just goes, oh, you're fucking dick. And then it's like everybody laughs at his thing, but
Do
he's popped
you
your cherry, yeah.
so I had a situation a few months ago where a musician says in the middle of the song, we need to go back to the start, and I don't agree with that. I think we just figure it out and make it work. And we're not going back to the start again to do a song. I just refuse to do
Back
it.
to the start of the set list or back to
No,
the start of
just I'm assuming just the song. We are right,
the song?
we're on it. But I just don't really like that. I was like, you know, let's just have a shite song rather than go back to the start. And I don't know. This is just a weird opinion I've got on it. What would you do if you either get heckled or you forget, like you make a mistake? I'm not saying that you do make mistakes, but I'm assuming
Oh,
that,
I make mistakes, man, for sure.
especially
What do you know what I've
the
done is
would you go back to the
if I'm
start? Would you change the subject, or would you try and go back to the start of the joke if it's a long one? What
If
would you
somebody ruins it, I just deal with them, and then I go, let me just explain what I was about to say there. And then I don't even perform it. I just go, so what I do is I say this, and then I say that. And then at the end of that bit, I'll kind of pause for a wee second, and then I'll say this. And people find it very funny. But unfortunately, you have ruined it. So shut the fuck up. And crowds enjoy that, I think,
That's
because
just
they can kind of see through. You know, I'm an all right performer, so people can kind of, if I'm like, I'm not going to perform this, I'm just going to tell you what would happen.
if
And then
this
when
guy
people
hadn't
laugh,
ruined
I
it.
go, see, imagine I had actually done that. If that guy hadn't ruined it, it would have been amazing.
As
Unfortunately,
silence,
we'll never know.
we'll never. As silence, I've got a theory that the silence is the secret to comedy. Being comfortable in the uncomfortable silences enough to like just so like because obviously I've done sort of like the closest I've got to doing stand up was maybe doing introducing spoken word stuff, which is funny. It was comedy kind of spoken word. And I noticed that after I'd done a couple of gigs, I'm totally out of practice now, so I'd be terrible. But when you're doing it quite often, there's a beat, there's a rhythm to it. And just being able to shut up when people are laughing and enjoying a line and just shut up. Maybe even repeat it. And is that the secret? Or what, if not, what is the secret of comedy?
I don't know what the secret comedy is, but silence is definitely really, really important. And I took a wee bit of inspiration for spoken word when I started because there was a night at Yes Bar called the Variety Society, and it was like an open mic, not just for stand up. But if you never heard the Yes Bar, potential listener, you never heard the Yes Bar, it was a Scottish independence themed Italian restaurant, and it had a sister restaurant called Liberty, which was a Scottish independence themed French restaurant. There was no Scottish independence themed Scottish restaurant. yeah, it was an amazing place, and they had a night called the Variety Society, and anybody could get up. So you would get. I was desperate for stage time, so I was like, "I'll go down to the Variety Society in front of five people." And I remember a guy called Sam Small,
Oh,
who I
Sam, I
just
know
thought
Sam well. Yep.
amazing, and the way he spoke, he would really bring the crowd in. Had these, he wasn't reading it; he was just like monologuing, and he wasn't like begging for laughs. It was funny, but it was like dramatic. And I just remember, God, I really need to learn how to do that. And I kind of stole a few, no lines off him, but I kind of took inspiration from him when I started. I honestly, still some of the best poetry I've ever
Yeah.
seen.
Aye, there's no doubt. Sam just kind of, you get lost in it, and you believe what he's doing. He takes you on a little journey, and it's very funny as well, and quite emotional at times as well. I don't know where he is now. I remember the last time I
Last time I
spoke to
spoke to him, he was at a yoga retreat.
right.
I don't
Well,
know
you've
what he
got
was doing there.
well,
He
it's
was working there, I think.
okay. It's about ages with me. You've got to choose yoga or smack at one point, and it's like, I'm kind of like 50-50. I've never tried either. I'd like to clarify. I've never tried either, but I'm at that age. It's like, right, are we going in? Are we going in for the brown stuff or the stretches?
Pick a team.
Pick a side. I actually, I was laughing at Oh, I watched a wee bit of your stand-up again. I watched it before, but I watched it again a wee bit last week. Who, by the way, Jigsaw Tiger, Amanda says, I watched it the other week, and it was brilliant, lots of laughs and great storytelling.
Thank you, Jigsaw Tiger. That's
that quote, you can use that quote on your new tour poster with the sold out Dundee shows on it. But yeah, but you were talking about the weed, and that's where I'm at with weed now. You described my weed experience. As someone who used to like a puff, but I stopped, and now my tolerance...
I'll get back into it.
My tolerance got too low, and people's weed get too strong. Yeah. And I still enjoy it sometimes. I think it's George Carlin, they said, maybe 72 or something, they went, do you still take drugs? And they went, I still have a couple of puffs when I'm editing, and I thought that was quite good. So
when
I
he's
still,
editing?
He writes sober, and then he just like has a couple of puffs, and he... So sometimes I do that if I'm about to record, maybe what next week I'm like, do you know what, I've got this song, it's nearly done, but maybe I'll have a couple of puffs because I'm going to be cool with George Carlin.
Yeah,
and then
man.
I just start freaking out and thinking I'm having a heart attack.
I've started eating gummies, and then I've got a pal who has, for medical purposes, she's got a vape pen, a legal weed pen.
Yes,
and I've had a few.
It's legal if you fill out a form. You just need to fill out a form though. But
so I've been having a wee toot on that. The other week though, I had a puff, and then I was just lying down, and I was shaped like a snake. Do you know that way when you're so stoned, like you start doing this with your horns, and you just kind of start doing vampire stuff? And I was all curled up, and I was like, I was like a gummy snake or something. It was horrible. But I can't really handle it at all. I always think, oh, because I remember hearing the song Sweet Leaf by Black Sabbath when I was a wee guy, and it just sounds amazing. I love Black Sabbath, I love stoner metal, I love weed films, but then I realise I don't need to be stoned to enjoy them, necessarily. I'm already there, basically.
Well, did you know that you can just fill out a form and get it, if you want it?
I thought you had to have, like, something wrong with you.
Aye, but cannabis cures everything, don't you know? It's like pretty much everything.
That's where the Black Sabbath song said
that. You state a claim. I think it was you who said that it makes bad movies better. So you could just say, what? I'm watching this really shite film, and you know, I've already paid Amazon. I pay a monthly thing for Amazon, and then I'm paying another £6 for an Amazon film. They're like, oh, fair enough, you're taking an ounce. But
I'm watching Blade 3.
That's the reason most people don't know about this and don't get the legal cannabis, because, well, I mean, I hate filling out forms as well. I've never get any funding because I can't be bothered filling a form. Fuck knows. Yeah. There's definitely no chance I'm doing it if I'm stoned, man. So I think 100%. That's what's slowing it down. Henry Rollins at the Pavilion as part of the Glasgow Comedy Festival was brilliant.
Wow. Relentless
and so much energy nonstop as well. So that's quite interesting. That, so what is Henry Rollins? Because he's obviously, I've seen...
He was in Black Flag. Yeah, he was in Black. I was like, oh, you know who he is.
Yeah, no, I know who he is. I'm aware of his stuff, but so at what point does that become comedy? Because he's kind of telling funny stories from back in the day.
I mean, it became a kind of one-man show guy, I think. I think he got fed up with music, and he just decided to be a storyteller. And a bit, what is it? What's the word? A polemic. He was a polemicist. And he would just get up there, which I think is the difference between being a polemicist and being a stand-up. When does it
change though? How many? So I'm just genuinely curious, because what's the politics behind that? Does it at some point?
It's just about form, isn't it? It's about what's the difference between all the different genres of performances? So stand-up's a very specific thing. It was kind of vaudeville before a play. There'd be a guy in front of a curtain in the early half of the 20th century. And then, you know, in America, you had the kind of guys in New York and coffee clubs with a brick wall behind them. And,
right, okay.
And
so
then
what
that kind of filters down. But then being a one-man storyteller is a completely, that's a more theatrical thing.
So if Henry Rollins just did quicker anecdotes, because obviously his anecdotes go on a bit. I like them. I'm a fan. I like it. But what if you just shortened them down and told, you know, instead of doing one story that lasts 10 minutes... He just did one story every 4 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And then imagine you did a set where you didn't have a punchline for 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Is there a crossover? When do you become a polemicist and when does he become a comedian? Or is he just no what like that? Is he not in the club? Do you need a license? Do you need a...
Yeah, you know... I think it's a lot of people who do stuff like that, and it's like Do you know, I don't hold them any ill will. When you hear about somebody, who, I remember I was, I will not say his name because he's a nice guy, but I remember talking to somebody at a gig in London, and it was his 15th gig. He was famous for doing TikToks and Instagram videos and stuff. And he was like, I'm doing my first, he was playing the O2 in Glasgow, and he was doing his first tour. And it was all the O2s up into the country. And he was going to be playing, you know, 600 seaters and 1,000 seaters. And he's like, I've only done 15 gigs and I need to get better because I'm doing this big tour soon. And I was just like, God bless you, man, because it's hard. It's like I've had 10 years of practice in all the toilets and now I'm doing kind of bigger rooms someplace.
Yeah, that seems a bit extreme. Seems a bit extreme. But also it seems a bit extreme having to do toilets for 10 years. And then people still call
both
you.
Both of us have made mistakes.
I was going to say that because obviously what people mean a lot of the time, you know, I've never been called an overnight success because I've never been successful, but you know, eventually what happens is I've seen it happen to friends of mine and stuff, and it's like they just suddenly they get on the newspaper for whatever reason and they're called an overnight success. What will you say to them? What will you say to those who say you're an overnight success?
Fair fucks. It basically just means I've never heard of you until right now.
Or like Ren, I don't know if you know the musician Ren, all his fans are a bit, they're all a bit pissed off. He's got obsessed fans. He went viral about a year ago. Ren's amazing. But his fans are really obsessed and he was on the Sky Arts last night and they called him a TikTok musician. So, because he went viral. But he's not even that big in TikTok. You know, he's big on the rest of them, but he's not really in TikTok. But that's how the mainstream, the old school legacy media, whatever they call it.
Legacy media versus new media is so interesting.
So they just got to call them TikTok. Oh, it's a TikTok superstar because they just don't understand who the fuck it is.
Aye. I mean, I feel kind of daft because stand-up is a wee bit like being a book writer or something. It's like a kind of art form for 40 years ago. Do you know what I mean? It was the cutting-edge thing. When Billy Connolly was out, it was like, wow, is this new thing stand-up comedy? And now it's kind of like, it's an old-fashioned thing, which I like about it. I like how old-fashioned and traditional it is. And the form is so established that you can make wee tweaks to it and revitalise it a wee bit. But like, I just wish I'd started a podcast about 5 years earlier or something. You know,
I know, we missed the boat. Always missed the boat with this stuff. Missed the boat with this stuff.
But look at us now, we're doing a stream on YouTube.
That's like, Facebook, that'll never catch on, and then it fucking caught on, and then it was too late. And then YouTube, that'll never work. Just always a bit late. And then I just strolled up to TikTok in December 2023, saying, I'm a Scottish guy in Mexico. Nothing. Crickets. Everyone's like, oh, you should go on TikTok. It's easy to go viral on TikTok. 130 followers, man. I can't do it.
I don't put it on TikTok anymore because it was my fault. I put a stupid clip up and I got a bit of hassle for it. But the abuse I got on TikTok was just absolutely. I did sell out the Fringe that year, but and I think a part of it was because people were like, "Oh, can I believe all this stuff people were saying with him with it?" But it was just that. It was just stupid stuff.
I'm not heard anything about that.
It was like a joke about Rangers and Celtic, and people really.
Well, actually, that's a good point. You've got. I was going to ask you, Chris MacArthur Boyd. Did you put the MacArthur in as your stage name because you were going to be called Chris Boyd? Because as someone who's also got the name of an old firm football player, I can understand why you've got to do something to differentiate.
No, I was Christopher Boyd before Chris Boyd joined the Rangers team. But
I don't mean you were named after him. Neither was I wasn't named after the guy either. I wasn't named after that guy.
Yeah.
I'm in the show. I've got fucking a few words to have with that guy.
About ruining your life.
The guy that ruined my life, aye?
No, I got a double barrel name because my dad's dad died of a heart attack. He was a window cleaner. He died of a heart attack when he was a baby. And then he had a stepdad whose name was MacArthur, so I'm Boyd by blood, but then MacArthur, and then my dad was trying to sign on, and they said, well, you've been two guys, because his stepdad insisted that he took his second name, so it was a complicated thing, where basically he was signing on, and he thought, I'll just double barrel it, and then I've got both my names I've had, and then new people think, I went to Hutchie or something, and I'm like, no, I wish. Bannerman High School.
It's CMB, but it's good, like, I mean, a lot of poets the successful poets usually have a middle name.
Mm.
I think it's a CMB as you were. We're wrap up. So I've just got a couple of final things I need to
CMB as you were.
CMB as you were. So obviously, that is good. I wish I'd thought of that. Obviously, Liam Gallagher did that.
Yeah, he did.
Were, MD, kiss.
It's just such a mad thing to put at the end of a tweet, because tweet already has your name at the top of it. So why would you put? Why would you initially? Hulk Hogan does it as well. He'll go HH and Celtic fans think he's saying
he will.
No. He will, boys.
Fucking old
Hulk Hogan. And Hulk Hogan is an Irish name, so you know, like, it makes sense. I'm sure he does support, and some universe out there, Hulk Hogan and Henrik Larsson are best pals, I think. But
so do you do it every tweet you finish with CMB as you were?
Only if it just feels, I don't know about you, but I'm kind of, I don't like self-promotion, but you have to do it. So I think if you're going to do it, act like you're really Big Boss and go CMB as you were at the end of it. Because I mean, it doesn't make any sense for me to go, hey, another week of the podcast, you know, or like, hey, just put, Dundee just sold out, extra show in Dundee. It feels gross being like, oh, look at how well I'm doing. So he's put CMB as you were, as I kind of. But then some people take it at face value and they're like, you think you're Liam Gallagher? And I'm like, nah, I don't think I'm Liam Gallagher. You fucking wank.
That sums up why I've still got friends of mine that I grew up with. They don't know I'm even in a band. They still think I work in a call centre, because they would say, oh, you hate your Liam Gallagher. Because that's what they say to anybody who tries to do anything that's not a call centre or a slaughterhouse.
You think about people, you think about them too, obviously. There's been a lot of chat about Oasis, but the absolute gumption of they two. People in their life must have been like, used to are fucking mental. And they were mental, but used to must be, how daft do you think you are that you can start a rock band? You know? And I don't really like the music, but I do really respect where they came from, what they did with it.
I love how CMB sounds posh, but the name originated from a Monday book.
Was that Monday book?
I don't get it. I don't know what I was going to say. Sorry, Amanda.
Is a Monday book like a gyro book or something, maybe?
Oh, yeah, of course it is. A Monday book. It'll be a gyro. Sense. It's a gyro.
Context. We can do this.
It's because I take it.
I feel so bad because I'll get posh English cunts come to see me at the Fringe and they're like, oh, we thought you would.
Yeah.
We thought maybe you had a house in Aberdeen, but you were from, you know, but now you're actually.
What
scum.
Was that? What was that game that you talked about? You're in the podcast, you were saying you had a friend from London, you slept at his feet like a cat, and that he. But you said there was a game.
He was up visiting us, and we were talking about having a five-a-side game at Glasgow Green. And he went, you guys are playing fives? And I was like, yeah, we play fives sometimes. And he goes, I can't believe that. And I was like, what do you think fives is? And he's like, oh, fives, the old Etonian game of fives. You wear a glove and you throw the ball at the wall. It's like squash, but with gloves. And we didn't even laugh at him. We just looked at him with, God, you are adorable, man. You are not in your element.
Do you use new media for, like, do you try and make the reels, the Insta reels?
I kind of have a distaste. I have loads of friends who I really respect and love, and they do, you know, crowd work videos, and that's all well and good. For me personally, I'm trying to. I'd probably be more popular if I'd done stuff like that. But for me, I like to record an hour, put out a special as an album and as a video, and then clip that up. And then
release your singles,
essentially, you know. So, and maybe I'd be more popular if I'd done it a bit more mercenarily.
But you know,
I done Twitch for a wee bit, but only during COVID. And I didn't really. It was just a wee bit too. I like being an artist. I like being creative, and it felt a wee bit uncreative to just play video games. And there was creative things you could do, but I had a game show on there called Ingredigess, where I would go in my fridge and I'd find something, and then I'd get somebody for the chat, and they would have to guess the ingredients to. Like what I'd got for the fridge, and that was really fun, but it wasn't creative. Do you know what I mean? It was a good laugh, but it wasn't like I want to make stuff and tell stories and I didn't, and people can do that on there, but I couldn't.
Yeah.
I think what Lemmy does is absolutely amazing. He's an absolute...
It's amazing, man. I mean, I don't watch the when it's happening, but whoever's doing the clips, God bless you guys.
The clip just, guy on that.
It's just constant, man. It's just on my algorithm all the time. Lemmy clips are brilliant. I didn't get... Yeah, we stopped streaming. I've kind of pretty much stopped streaming to Twitch completely because I was just multi-streaming it. But the problem is it's a different language you've got to use with Twitch, and it just gets complicated. And
every platform has its own grammar and stuff, you know.
And it's the same way that there's people that are listening to the audio podcast now, and I'm saying, look at this on the screen. So sorry about that. I can't.
If you're wondering what was on the screen, it was a graphic image of a Samoan man rubbing his arse on Paul Heyman's face. That was what we were. That's what we were doing.
And before that, there was a Cumberland shopping centre.
It's a documentary about Cumberland.
Check out Brutalist Architecture for more information on that.
Check out the book Bra Concrete if you're interested in Brutalist Architecture.
What are you pointing, apart from the tour, is anything else? How can people follow you?
Big Glasgow show at the Pavilion. It's the biggest show I've ever done in my puff. Biggest show since there. And before that in Glasgow would have been The Stand, which is 150 seats. This is 1,450 seats. I've kind of went out on a limb. And we're selling well, man. You know, this floor's sold out. And then, like, the stalls is doing well. And this inner, the circle's selling well. But, like, yeah, that's in November, and we're going to record that as my second special. So, please come and see that. What is that?
November 8th.
And that's going to be, that'll be the next big show. I'm going to stick that on YouTube eventually. But I'm getting the guy who filmed Kevin Bridges' specials to record that. And, the first one was recorded by the guy who done James Acaster's, a guy called Stuart Laws for Turtle Canyon. He's amazing. But this one's going to be in my first big venue in Glasgow, and I'm getting the guy who done Bridges and who done Susan McCabe's as well. So there's a good pedigree. The guy knows how to shoot stuff, and I just hope I can film it. But the show is really fun, so I come to that. That'll be good. I'm terrible at promoting myself. CMB,
as you
know.
It's all right. No, you did good. It's a big moment for you, man. The Pavilion.
Yeah,
who would have thought it? I can't even remember.
Peter Powers and me, man.
Where would I have seen you? I definitely seen you when you were playing it. Like, I don't know if I was in the same bill as you, but it feels like it would have been a small pub with about five people about.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. First time I seen you was Broadcast, I think.
Yeah.
Broadcast, was like Gyro Babies. I don't know.
Hector Berserk, Colonel Mustard one night, maybe?
Yeah, that was a night, yeah. Somebody's birthday.
It was Nico Little Wing's birthday. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was awesome. I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was right down the front, and I was like, I'd heard all the bands, and but live was completely different, and the way your performance was.
I had gloves that night. I think I'd.
You came back for a game of fives.
Perfect way to end the show. Thank you, Chris. Here comes the guillotine. Go and check out that podcast with Frankie.
Oh, please do. Please do.
It is the best podcast in the world.
Yes, man. Number one in Scotland.
Amazing.
Other than You Call That Radio.
Obviously, other than You Call That Radio, of course. But thank you very much. Go and check out the tour. It's coming up in Dublin, Leeds, Dundee, Brighton, Aberdeen, Dumfries, Glasgow, Belfast, Cardiff, Southampton, Bristol. CMB, as you were.
As you were. Thank you so much.
As you were. Go check out Christopher MacArthur Boyd. They put the link in the comments to his stand-up special. The first one, which is available to watch for free on YouTube right now. And there's still tickets available for the second special at the Pavilion on November the 8th. Once again, thank you to all the patrons who support the show at patreon.com/youcallthatradio. I'm away. Sorry, I didn't shout out Stevens, who commented the other. Now you tell us, Mark, after we gratefully accepted those guest pass for Equinox. I think he's referring to the weather. I'm just making up that it's raining. I haven't even checked the weather. It's too sunny today, so I'm assuming that it's going to rain all weekend. But I'm glad you got the tickets to Equinox Festival, you and Gordon, and all the other patrons that were taking Equinox Festival. One more festival this weekend, and yeah, that's this weekend. Friday night, Gyro's 9 o'clock, and I'll see you later. Bye!
Right. Dr. John Cooper Clark, do you call that radio? For this.
3.
Brothers and sisters, may the peace that can only come from the one God be upon you. We are here to tell the people.